Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome, everyone. This is Tamara Walker, host of the Ask Mom RN show, and I am so glad that you have joined us today. This is our first show of 2015, and today is Monday, January 19th, 2015. Happy New Year, everyone. We are so excited to have you with us today and to be back live on the air with you. And you may be wondering, if you're a regular listener, why we're airing on the old Ask Mom RN show account today instead of the Fly Lady channel. Well, unfortunately, we're having some technical difficulties on the Fly Lady channel. I'm not able to access everything that I need in order to host the show on there today, and Blog Talk Radio is trying to help me figure out what the glitch is and what's going on, you know, what's happening sometimes. You know, we used to, years ago, when I started this show on Blog Talk Radio, it's been almost 7 years ago, believe it or not, it's been almost 7 years. And back in those days of Blog Talk Radio being fairly new, we had, you know, frequent technical glitches and difficulties. And so I would call them the BTR gremlins. And I would say that the BTR gremlins are at it again. They're at play. Well, they have struck again, even though for years and years and years, things pretty much always run very smoothly. For some reason, the BTR gremlins are at it again with my account and couldn't host this today on the Fly Lady channel, but we hope to be back on there very soon, get that straightened out. So we're using our old account, and we are glad to have you with us today and be able to have the show today. I was afraid I was going to have to just cancel it altogether, and I didn't want to do that because, like I said, this is our first show of the new year. We kind of took a couple of weeks off to rest and recuperate after the holidays and the busyness of the holiday season, and getting geared up for this year and prepared for this year. So it's great to be back. And then also I wanted to make sure that I hosted a show today because I'll be off next week. I'm going to be spending some time with family out of state and traveling. And so it was very important to me that we share these interviews with you today because we have some great guests joining us. And we have some tips to help you and your family have a happy, healthy new year and to make 2015 the very best it can be. So our first guests, we're going to welcome back to the show Dr. Roshini Raj, and she's been on the show a few times before. I'm sure you're familiar with her from the Today Show, many other national shows that she does. She's a very well-known doctor, and she is here today to talk with us a little bit about New Year's resolutions and also about a GI condition that a lot of people may not be familiar with called EPI, and we'll talk about what that is in just a moment with Dr. Raj. She is being joined by 28-year-old Julie Dubois, who was diagnosed with EPI several years ago. And you know, when we start the new year, a lot of us start off with the best of intentions, and you know, we want to make good habits. We make these resolutions because we want to better our lives, improve our health, improve our family and our lives. And you know, sometimes we want to replace bad habits, start new good habits. But how many of us really keep them for very long? You know, it seems most people within the first month, you know, at least by the end of January, beginning of February, most of those resolutions tend to go by the wayside, right? Well, with the holidays behind us, now it is time to really take care of ourselves and to refocus on our health. And whether you make resolutions or not, everybody needs to make health a priority. Whether you do it as a resolution or whether you just say, you know, hey, today's my January 1st, no matter what day of the year it is. Today I'm going to start doing, you know, things that are better for my health. I'm going to take care of my health and make those changes. And small changes add up. And in fact, small changes are often the best way to go because you can develop those habits and keep them before adding new ones instead of trying to change everything at once. Trying to change lots of different things in your life at one time is going to set yourself up for failure. It almost never works. So we've got some great tips from Dr. Roshini Raj and Julie Dubois. So let's welcome them to the show.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning, Dr. Raj. Good morning, Julie. Welcome to the Ask Mama Arin show.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for being with us. Dr. Raj, I wanted to start with you and ask, why should people make digestive health one of their New Year's resolutions or a priority in the new year?
Well, we're learning more and more about the importance of our digestive tract and how it really can impact our overall body, our overall health. And too often people tend to ignore GI symptoms, things like diarrhea, bloating, or gas. They may think it's normal or something they have to live with, or they're just simply too embarrassed to discuss it with their doctor. But this is a mistake. You really want to pay attention to what's going on with your digestion and talk to your doctor, because some of these symptoms could be a sign of a more serious underlying condition, something like EPI, for example, or exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, which Julie has some firsthand experience with.
And could you explain to us what EPI is, and then I'll ask Julie about her experience with it.
Yeah, so EPI, exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, means that your pancreas is not producing adequate amounts of digestive enzymes. These are the enzymes that help us digest our food, and in particular proteins, carbohydrates, and fats. So as you can imagine, if you're not digesting food well, you're not going to feel well, and you may experience bloating, diarrhea, urgent bowel movements or frequent bowel movements, abdominal pain, and sometimes even significant weight loss. So it's something you want to take very seriously. If you suspect you may have it, the website identifyepi.com has a lot of information about the symptoms. And you, bottom line, you need to talk to your doctor.
And Julie, when were you diagnosed with EPI, and what has your experience been with it?
I was diagnosed back in 2011, and a lot of the symptoms that Dr. Raj described were exactly what I was experiencing. So the diarrhea, bloating, gas, pain after I ate food, and especially having to schedule bathroom breaks around my ballet classes, for example, were things that were affecting my lifestyle. So it wasn't something that I could just kind of brush aside. I actually had to go speak with my doctor, put any embarrassment aside, and have that open conversation to get the proper diagnosis.
And Dr. Raj, a lot of people are making health changes, especially with the new year. A lot of New Year's resolutions are to lose weight or to eat healthier. And you say it's important for people to visit their doctor before they make major changes to their diet or to their fitness and activity. Why is it important? Why should we visit our doctor before making those changes?
Well, for diet in particular, when you start eliminating or cutting out certain foods, before you visit the doctor, then it could potentially affect the accuracy of some of the tests they may want to do. So before cutting something out, like wheat, for example, which is what a lot of people do on their own, you really want to see your doctor first, because if you're having symptoms, they may want to do a test or two that could be affected by that diet change. Speak to them first. And with exercise, you know, if you're not used to exercising or doing a certain type of exercise, it's important to talk to your doctor about whether that's appropriate for you or how you can safely do it without injuring yourself.
And Julie, you're a dietitian and a personal trainer. Has having EPI impacted your work?
It did initially whenever I was having all those symptoms, but once I got on the proper treatment and talked to my doctor about some of the lifestyle changes, which I prescribe to people all the time, like keeping a food log to track my symptoms and discussing that with my doctor if there's any foods that might be causing more issues, or introducing more exercise into my lifestyle, which I was pretty good about before, but when I got sick, I wasn't able to do as much. But actually getting into exercising again helped reduce stress levels, which are really highly correlated with digestive health, and additionally getting enough sleep, which is hard to do a lot of these times because we're busy. All of us are busy, but making sure that's a priority, not just in the new year, but year-round.
And Dr. Raj, are there some steps that we can take to help our digestive health and to improve it?
Yeah, well, Julie mentioned the food journal. I think that's a great step to take. It really helps you keep track of your symptoms and any food correlations there may be. It's also great information for your doctor. Bringing in that journal can really help them. I also think managing your stress is extremely important. We have this mind-gut connection. Our brains and our GI tracts are very interrelated, and the same neurotransmitters or chemicals we release in our brain when we're stressed or anxious can really affect our GI tract. So whether it's yoga or meditation or exercise, learning to manage your stress will definitely help your overall digestive health. Also, you know, we talked about not eliminating certain foods before speaking to your doctor. That's important as well. And for any kind of health goal, you want to make sure that it's something that's achievable, that you're thinking long-term, not a quick fix, but really the long road towards feeling better. And you want to give yourself some small, you know, easy-to-do steps, achievable, concrete things that you can do. For example, it may be going to sleep 20 minutes earlier every day. That's something that we can, most of us, if we really try, can do. And slowly that increases and you get more and more sleep, and it can really help you feel better.
Well, ladies, thank you so much for being with us. Where can we learn more and get more information?
You can go to identifyepi.com.
Well, thank you both for being with us.
Happy New Year.
Well, did you know January is not only the first month of the year, but it is also the germiest? This is according to a new survey of parents with children in kindergarten through sixth grade. But there are things that you can do to keep your kids healthy during the January Germ Fest. Here are some tips for creating a no germ zone and some info on keeping everybody healthy during the winter months is internist Dr. Carrie Peterson. Let's welcome Dr. Peterson to the show. Hello, Dr. Peterson. Welcome to the Ask Mom RN show.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being with us. Dr. Peterson, would you tell us what the survey revealed about kids and colds?
Parents who were surveyed from kids ages kindergarten through grade 6 reported that winter is the germiest season and that January is the germiest month. They also felt their kids get 3 colds per year and that 60% of parents felt that if their child is getting sick, they're going to get sick too.
And why is that? When kids come home from school and they take ill with a cold or another illness, why does it seem to make it through the whole family?
Well, the main way that germs are spread is through the air and through touching contaminated surfaces. And because children tend not to wash their hands enough and they don't tend to cover their mouths when they cough or sneeze, it just creates more of a fertile environment for lots of germs to settle around your house.
And that is quite a challenge to teach, especially young children, how to wash their hands properly and to make sure that they're doing it on a frequent basis. How can we help teach kids to stay germ-free as they possibly can? I mean, obviously, we can't get rid of all germs, but to, you know, wash
right.
hands frequently. And how can we create a no-germ zone?
Well, a no-germ zone, what I mean by that is a program designed to keep your family healthy by educating your children regularly. And the first tip I have is to teach them how to wash their hands with soap and water even when you're not around. Make sure they do it long enough to sing happy birthday twice is a good rule of thumb. But if they don't have access to soap and water, if they're in the car or if they're at school, I'm here on behalf of Wet Ones who did this survey, and if you keep Wet Ones wipes handy in these environments, then they can clean their hands and kill germs when they don't have access to a sink. And then lastly, teach your kids not to touch their eyes, nose, or mouth. I know that's hard, but it's very important to help prevent the spread of germs.
It is. And what are some of the other facts that parents need to know about colds and illnesses during the winter?
Well, the old wives' tale that going out in chilly weather can make you sick has actually been found to be true. Going in cold weather can suppress your immune system, and that can make you more susceptible to germs. So bundle up with a scarf and a hat if you're going in cold weather. Also, that good old chicken soup really does work. It helps loosen mucus, and it has anti-inflammatory properties, so it's very healthy for you. And then lastly, be sure to get your children vaccinated for the flu, because that is one of the best ways to prevent the flu.
And the flu really is becoming a big problem this year already in many states.
Yes, January is where we're really starting to see rises in numbers.
Well, Dr. Peterson, how can parents learn more about what we've talked about today and about how they can create a no germ zone and teach their kids how to stay germ free?
You can go to wetones.com for all sorts of tips.
Well, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And we want to thank Dr. Peterson for being with us. And talking about the flu in particular, it has reached kind of an epidemic level. 46 states, I believe, now have had a lot of flu cases reported. And unfortunately, the flu vaccine this year is not quite as effective as it normally is, simply because when the CDC creates, when the flu vaccines are created, CDC tries to predict which strains of the flu, because keep in mind there's many, many, many different influenza viruses, types of flu. The CDC has to predict what are going to be the most common ones, most likely to be spread, and create the vaccine each year based on what strains they see are the potential to cause the most problems. And so typically your flu vaccine will protect against three or four different strains depending on which vaccine you get. And there's different types of vaccine. There's the intradermal, there's the intramuscular, and then there's the nasal spray. And so this year's vaccine, unfortunately, does not completely protect against the most common or most prevalent strain that we're seeing going around right now. It was kind of a surprise that this one has spread across the country, is making a lot of people ill, and even people who had the flu vaccine are getting the flu because this particular strain is not in the flu vaccine. However, the flu vaccine still has benefit to you. If you haven't received it already this winter, this flu season, I would encourage you to talk with your doctor, and if it's appropriate for you, go ahead and get it, because the flu season can start as early as October and go as late as May. And it typically peaks around this time of the year. January, February is when we typically see the most cases. And you need 2 weeks for those antibodies to build up in your system after getting the flu vaccine. But it's not too late to get the vaccine if you haven't had it. And even though the strain of flu that is causing the most problems right now was not in this year's flu vaccine, it can still give you some protection, and especially it'll protect you from the strains that are in there, and those are going around as well. So it will offer you some protection, and it could potentially make your case of the flu less severe if you do get it, maybe shorter duration, hopefully. And if you show symptoms of the flu, or if one of your kids, a family member, if you have any symptoms that you think this could be the flu, you need to get in touch with your doctor or be seen as quickly as possible. Because the sooner you are seen, the better the likelihood of being helped by antiviral medication. Some doctors are willing to just call it in, but others will require you to come in for a doctor's visit. The sooner that you can get on an antiviral if you do have influenza, the better it works, the more it can help you with shortening the duration of your illness and lessening the severity, which reduces your chances of complications. You know, the flu is so dangerous mainly because it can lead to complications, specifically the worst being pneumonia, which leads to a lot of deaths. And in our very young children and in our senior citizen population, and then with anybody who has an existing health condition that may make their immunity not as good as it should be, if they already have any health problems, you know, they are at more risk for having complications from the flu that could lead to death. And so it's very, very important. You know, to protect ourselves and our family. And if you have symptoms, don't go to work. Don't send the kids to school if they're sick. You know, when we try to work through the flu and go to work, we're spreading it to everybody else. If you're sending kids to school with flu-like symptoms, they're spreading the flu to everybody around them at school. And we need to just stay in, get plenty of rest, lots of fluids, follow your doctor's orders. And, you know, this flu season is looking like a really bad one. They're predicting it's going to be the worst one since 2008, which was a really bad flu season. So protect yourself, protect your family. If you've not had the vaccine already, talk with your doctor about which one is appropriate for you and whether you should take it. I highly recommend it. So moving on, this month of January is Thyroid Awareness Month. So we have a couple of experts here to talk with us about thyroid health and what you need to know about taking care of your thyroid.
Hi, I'm Mac Harrell. I am a thyroidologist practicing in Hollywood, Florida, and I am also the president of the American Association of Clinical Endocrinologists.
I am Yuda Handelsman. I am an endocrinologist in clinical practice in Tarzana, which is part of Los Angeles, California, and I am the president of the American College of Endocrinology.
And we're both here today to talk about Thyroid Awareness Month. January is Thyroid Awareness Month. So because we do thyroid illness every day in our practices, Dr. Handelsman and I are very interested in communicating the importance of this month to all of your listeners and viewers.
Well, the thyroid, which is a very small gland, one of the smallest glands, if not the smallest gland that we have, that is very, very important to life. And thyroid can have a lot of conditions. I mean, up to 30 million people can have a thyroid problem, and perhaps half of them may not know about it. Now, despite the fact that there are more books written about this one gland than any other part of the body, there's a whole medical society and two and three devoted just to thyroid and many others, yet that word has not been taken out there enough, I think, Mac. And doing that awareness between the two societies is probably very important to the public.
Absolutely. So there are a lot of misconceptions about the thyroid. The simplest way to put it is it's a gland at the base of the neck that can that produces thyroid hormones that control the metabolism of every cell in the body. Too much thyroid hormone increases the metabolic rate in all the cells of the body. Too little decreases the metabolic rate. And these changes in every cell result in symptoms.
Yes, and when we're looking at people with hypothyroid, which probably is the most prevalent thing with, you know, condition we see,
yes,
related to thyroid, you know, they have low energy. They are tired, in fact, sluggish, sleepy. They may gain weight even if they don't eat. Well, everybody gains weight if they don't eat much. But really, there is an impossibility to lose weight. They get constipated. They don't concentrate well. And the heart rate is slow. And people, they get cold. Like, you know, you hear it from the patient, I feel cold all the time. And then dry skin and losing hair. So, you know, having such slow metabolism is not good. And then hyper is just the flip part of that.
Yeah, on the hyper side, which is the less common, but still something that that Dr. Handelsman and I see every day, hyperthyroidism turns up the metabolic rate, increases the heart rate, may make the skin moist, damp, may make the hands shake, may change the handwriting, may cause weight loss, increase the bowel function so that you actually have excessive bowel movements. So that's the flip side of the hypo picture. The treatments also are varied depending on whether the thyroid hormone is produced in too great a quantity or too little.
And I think it's also important to realize that to live, we must have thyroid hormone. So even though hyper, overactive thyroid is clearly easier to find, and it may feel that it can kill people because it can cause sometimes heart arrhythmia, like changes in the heart rhythm. Yet, without thyroid, people will die. And so the treatment in that respect are very different. The hyperthyroid treatment, we treat like we manage any other medical condition. We want to slow down the thyroid. We'll give pills, or we'll give you some radionuclear iodide to kill part of the whole thyroid, or even a surgery to take the thyroid out can take it. So it's a medical management of that thyroid. On the other hand, for low thyroid, really it's a replacement management. We give the hormone back to the body, and the pituitary gland does not differentiate even between a thyroid that the body makes or the pill that we give the body. It reacts the same way. What does differ is how we swallow.
Yes,
and how the absorption is.
Yes, and so that's why in this campaign this year, we've devised questions for both the doctor and the pharmacist, because the type of preparation that you use to treat hypothyroidism makes a difference. Brands and generic pills may have the same amount of thyroid hormone, but even though on the pill the amount is said to be the same, there are slight differences. So when a patient goes to their pharmacist and receives their thyroid hormone preparation for treatment of hypothyroidism, every time they need to be sure that they're getting the same preparation from their pharmacist. And this requires a relationship.
And so because there are so many people that have it, and because there's so much myth going around, and you know, a lot of things are being put on thyroid, and really if you've got a thyroid problem, it's only a medical way to manage it. There are no supplements there that create a hormone for you, unless you know they're using another hormone, which can be sometimes a way to go about it. So we thought the ACE, American Association of Clinical Endocrinologists, the American Clinical of Endocrinology, we thought that we will, this year, Thyroid Month, Thyroid Awareness Month, we will make the population more aware of the thyroid condition. And so they can go to the website that we have, the thyroidawareness.com, where there's a lot of information about the thyroid, and then the question that we designed, so we will make it easier for a person to bring it up when they go to the checkup to see the doctor to find out, you know, do I have a condition related to the thyroid? And then, as you heard, it is so important, then the management would be consistent, so there's at least of those questions of what to ask the pharmacist to make sure that they get consistent treatment and medication from the pharmacist.
So in terms of the most frequent thyroid disease, which is hypothyroidism, we tell all of our patients that take thyroid hormone, the three words that are important are actually one word: same, same, same. Same preparation of thyroid hormone, same time of day, and same circumstances, same relationship to all other medications. Very important to remember, we encourage all of you to visit our website, which is thyroidawareness.com. Look at the 10 questions, think about the material that's on the site, and have a great January Thyroid Awareness Month.
And with that, just remember that the thyroid does not go away in February. So that website is going to be there year-long, and you know, people can come to thyroidawareness.com, get further information, and we keep updating it year-long. We don't wait just for January, and for you to go get that information and then have an open discussion with your family, actually, with your physician, and then with your pharmacist.
Thanks.
Thank you.
So we want to thank them for being with us and providing that information. Thanks for joining us today. We will be back in February. And please check our Facebook page at facebook.com/AskMomRNShow for updates. We'll let you know when our next episode will be. And we thank you all for your support. Thanks for being here. And Happy New Year. Bye-bye.